One of my favorite parts of flying on a plane is, as you're ascending, watching the world become, well, not disappear, but what seems so complex and sometimes so confusing, as you get higher and higher, you can see the patterns that appear there. And when you're at a cruising altitude or lower than that, you can recognize those patterns that you could never see on the ground. Now, of course, you can do this with Google Earth, and you don't have to worry about the fool in front of you putting his seat back right into your knees. But that sense of pulling back from things so you can get a sense of what the overall pattern is one of the things that scripture scholars do. And when they get in their plane and fly above the Gospel of Matthew, what they recognize is that there are these interesting units that occur in Matthew's Gospel. These units are composed of a narrative piece and then a discourse. So a story, and then Jesus talks. They discern five of these patterns, and what we're hearing today comes from the middle of these, from the third pattern. Some of those discourses that we've heard way back in the beginning of the year, we heard the Sermon on the Mount. More recently, we heard the Sermon on Mission. And starting last Sunday and going through next Sunday, we hear the Sermon in Parables. So this is the discursive part of this part of Matthew's Gospel. It's important to keep in mind, chapter 13 of Matthew's Gospel is when Jesus is facing intense questioning and people are beginning to turn against Jesus. So things are not going well. In the midst of this, he talks in parables. Parables. Jesus teaching in parables. It was his preferred way of teaching. Parabole in Greek means a comparison. And did you hear at the beginning of the gospel, the kingdom of heaven may be likened to, it is a comparison, it is a parabole, it is a parable. A comparison, but it's a specific kind of comparison. In the mid-20th century, the scripture scholar C.H. Dodd wrote this. At its simplest, the parable is a metaphor or simile drawn from nature or the common life, arresting the hearer by its vividness or its strangeness, and leaving the mind in sufficient doubt about its precise application to tease the mind into active thought, drawn from everyday life, but causing one to wonder what it really is about because there is a certain level of strangeness to it. A parable, this comparison, is supposed to get under your skin and bother you. It's not either easily solved like an allegory, all right? In the gospel, there's a choice of reading the longer version in which Jesus explains this parable to his disciples. I'm going to take the view that we're with the crowd that only hears the parable and we're not with the disciples that hear the explanation, because the parable standing by itself is what we really should be caught up with. But how do you approach a parable? How do you approach these arresting images that cause you to wonder what it is Jesus is talking about? A more recent scholar, Amy Jill Levine, suggests that there are two primary questions that you have to address when dealing with a parable. First of all, how parables through an imagined set of first century Jewish ears. In other words, how did Jesus' first audience hear this parable? And then secondly, how do we translate them so that they can be heard still speaking to us? All right. So what are we going to make of this parable of this commonly called the sower and the seed? It's the story of a man who sows his field, and then an enemy comes in and sows other seeds there, and his workers are wondering whether they should rip up what shouldn't be there. And he says, no, let's wait and see what happens. There's a really important part of this parable that is missing because of a really poor translation in the lectionary. It's not weeds. It's not generic weeds. It is a very specific thing. In Greek, it's dizania. Dizania. That is sometimes translated as darnel or cockle. And what that is a kind of weed that is very specific. So it's not generic weeds. It is dizanya or darnel. How are we going to find out about darnel? Of course, we're going to go to Wikipedia, right? Here's what Wikipedia says about darnel. Darnel usually grows in the same production zones as wheat and was a serious weed of cultivation until modern sorting machinery enabled darnel seeds to be separated efficiently from seed wheat. The similarity between these two plants is so great that in some regions, darnel is referred to as false wheat. It bears a close resemblance to wheat until the ear appears. That spins the parable in another direction, doesn't it? This isn't just generic weeds that they're talking about. It is a specific kind of weed that we know two things about. First of all, when scattering seeds, it's hard to tell wheat from darnel. Until modern times, there was an efficient way to separate those seeds. The second thing we know is that until it puts forth the ears of grain, it's hard to tell them apart. What's going on in the parable is that we have two things growing that you really can't tell the difference. And what is supposed to be done? A little footnote here, but it's a footnote that will become important, and it's hilarious too, at least to me. So dizanya in Greek means darnel. In Italian, zizanya also means darnel, but zizanya also means discord. And seminare zizanya means to sow discord. In fact, if you are called in Italy a zizanya, it means that you're somebody that stirs the pot and causes trouble. Okay? So, back to the parable. What is the surprise in this parable? It's not about the wheat and the seeds. It's about a piece of the parable that gets forgotten all the time. The enemy sowed the seeds, right? The enemy sowed the seeds. The help says, "Who did this?" The owner says, "An enemy did this." And they say, "Well, should we pull them all up?" But now you know it would be very hard to do that because they look like the same thing. They are looking for some kind of retribution against the enemy. They want to get even with this man who has apparently ruined the crop. But the landowner says, "No, we're just going to let them grow together. And eventually, when it comes to harvesting, when we can see the fruit of the plant, we will know which is which, and then we can divide them up. In the meantime, let them grow." The surprise to the hearers of Jesus' time would have been that he stepped away from retaliation, that he wasn't going to take his vengeance out on the man who had sowed the seeds in his field. He had a better way of doing it. He had the confidence that the wheat would grow in such a way that ultimately it would not be threatened by the darnel, and then they could harvest the wheat. All right, so maybe if that's kind of how first century ears heard that, it fits in with that time of Matthew's gospel, doesn't it? When Jesus is meeting resistance and opposition, people are beginning to think, "Aren't there weeds in your mission, Jesus? Is this really going to work out the way that you think it is?" And he is saying confidently, "Let them grow. Let them grow, and let's see how all this turns out." But we need to step a couple decades later when Matthew is writing this. Matthew is writing to a community that has former Jews in it, that has Gentile converts, and that is disappointed about the fact that the nation of Israel, that the people of Israel, have not come to see Jesus as the Messiah. They are internally on fire about this new religion, but not everybody is following. They are disappointed, and they are like the assistance of the landowner who want to rip out those things that aren't growing the way they should. And Matthew is saying to his community, let it grow. Let it grow and have some trust that at the end, this will be able to be worked out. Throughout the history of the church, this parable has come back in times of crisis as a warning to not take things into our own hands or to think that we can make that discernment of what is darnel and what is wheat. Because that actually puts us in the position of God, doesn't it? It puts us in the position of figuring out what kind of fruit these things are going to bear. And that is not the God that first reading talks about. There is no God beside you who have the care for all. Your mastery over all things makes you lenient to all. But though you are master of might, you judge with clemency. You're willing to wait to see what really is wheat and what really is darnel. There's a great line in there. For you show your might when the perfection of your power is disbelieved. Isn't that exactly what's happening to Landover? Landover, his people, his servants, disbelieve that he could let this happen, but by him letting this go on, he's actually showing his power and his wisdom and teaching that lesson in the first reading, that those who are just must be kind. Kind to even the darnel that's growing with the wheat, because you don't really know whether it is darnel or wheat. So how can we hear this today? Well, at a time when we are so polarized, everyone here could make a list, couldn't you, of the darnel in the field that surrounds you, right? All those things that we should go out and rip up right away. It's a challenge, of course, to be able to determine what things are absolutely important and need to be challenged, and then which things are really more about us and our likes and dislikes, and we need to pull back a little and let the Lord be the Lord and let the darnel grow, and maybe finding out that that darnel isn't darnel at all, and maybe it's actually wheat. The landowner was willing to wait. The landowner had patience. Frequently we don't, and we need to learn that lesson, that sometimes that patience is needed to see the way the Lord is going to actually work the harvest. Because here's the deal. In our great desire to take away the dizanya, that is the darnel, that is the weeds, there is the great danger that we become the zizanya. We become the ones who actually sow discord in the field.